Hello and welcome to Grafana's Big Tent, the podcast all about the people, community, tools and tech around observability. I'm here with my co-host Tom Wilkie. Hey Tom.
How you doing, Matt?
Pretty good. Not bad, thanks. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Did you enjoy dinner the other night?
I did, yeah. Tom made me dinner. It was so good.
I didn't make you eat it, though.
No, that was by choice. Just to be clear,
yeah.
Sorry, I don't think anyone was expecting that I've gone round to your house and then you've forced-fed me dinner.
Although that might have been more entertaining.
Not for me, but yeah, could be.
I've been looking forward to this episode.
I know, because this is a sort of this is your hobby, isn't it? Really,
it's one of my hobbies. Yeah, like I do a lot of this, and it keeps me sane. I feel like I can't program for fun anymore now that it's my day job. Yes, so I need to find a technical hobby that you know.
Yeah,
not as entertaining an anecdote as I thought it was going to be.
Well, it's pretty good. And speaking of not as an entertaining anecdote, we're also joined from Grafana Labs by Richie Hartman. Hello, Richie.
Hello.
It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Welcome to Grafana's Big Tent. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Is this the first time we've had you on the podcast, Richie?
Yes.
Oh, that surprised me. I thought we would have had you on earlier.
Me too.
I've been fighting you off with a stick, I thought.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. We've also got Pavel is joining us from Prusa Research. Pavel Strobel is also here. Hi, Pavel.
Hiya.
Welcome to the podcast. Maybe you could start, just tell us a bit about yourself and what you do there. Prusa Research.
I'm DevOps engineer at Prusa Research, and I joined like 2.5 years ago, right after the Embrace Grafana for DevOps department. Mm. Even though usage of Grafana is much longer at Prusa Research. What I do, I'm mostly observability and platform guy, so that's everything I do.
Nice.
And digging in Grafana is my hobby.
Oh, wow.
Very cool.
Great. That is cool.
I guess, like, you know, this is, as you said in your fantastic introduction, Matt, like, this is a observability podcast. So why are we doing an episode on 3D printing, Richie? Like, why are we here?
Several reasons. We do have a lot of engineers, obviously, and most of them are software engineers. So the thing is, if you work on software all day, every day, you don't really see any results. But still, we like tinkering, so we have a large maker community, and it's roughly split three-way between woodworking and 3D printing and electronics, I'd say. And in particular with 3D printing, which next to woodworking is my thing, all the software observability is kind of boring by now. Like, I've been in the business for like 20 years. But also using the same technology to understand the real world and derive more information from what's actually happening with things you can touch. That's just super interesting and just an intersection of interests. So I guess that's why we're doing this.
It's one of probably our most busy Slack channels, I reckon, on the company Slack is the 3D printing channel.
The incident channel is quite popular as well, where all the incidents go.
I was about to say maybe the non-work channel, the most popular and busy non-work channel.
Yeah. I like to think of 3D printing as really the opposite of woodwork, Richie, but you're interested in both. Pick a team, pick a side?
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, one is additive manufacturing and one is subtractive manufacturing. So it's literally coming from opposite ways. But the kind of thing, at least I tend to do, is roughly the same, which is basically useful stuff around the house. And you can use both for either.
Yeah.
Or either for, you know what I mean.
That's the killer use case for me. The idea that you could have you need a spanner of a particular size, and then you would be able to just create what you need. That's like the Star Trek. That's the dream that I was sold when I watched Star Trek. And really, I do want that with food as well, ideally.
Yeah, except for creating the spanner takes 3 hours and, you know, a year or two's worth of skills in CAD modeling.
There are chocolate printers, so.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, surely, isn't my HP inkjet like a 3D printer? You know, it prints in two dimensions and time.
if you think about it, a 3D printer is basically 2D printing, but a lot of layers of 2D printing.
Mm.
Yeah, but a part of HP is actually reliable.
I will say, yeah, it is my Prusa printers are much more reliable than my HP inkjet for sure. And so, you know, but there's also quite a big intersection between 3D printing and observability, as you kind of said in your intro, Pavel, right? You're using Grafana all over the place at Prusa Research, aren't you?
Yeah, as I said, the DevOps department is mostly used for web development. As you probably know, we are observing web services that are running at our Kubernetes cluster, et cetera, et cetera. Pretty usual stuff, you know. But we do as well use Grafana for development department that it's developing the 3D printers. But their use is pretty much different, because they have to develop the printer. So they have pretty much different kind of data than we do and use different technologies. Even though I'm not in charge of this development department, observability, I know a lot of stuff about it. And it's even accessible at our GitHub.
Oh, really? So what kind of things are the people designing these 3D printers? What are they using Grafana for?
Basically, when you are optimizing the printer, you have to test it, and you can see like metrics from the load cell. For example, how the probing of the heat bed, you can see the value of the filament sensor, which is analog. So you see that values changes when you are printing, for example, PLA or PETG or flexible filaments. It changes, and you can get these data and analyze them and implement stuck filament detection, which was released in, I think, version 6.0 firmware. Or all other data that are also interesting for the users. For example, current or voltage. So you can calculate power consumption.
Oh, right. Okay. That's cool. I can remember the first time I saw a 3D printer. And it was a Mendel, right? It was, one of the A-frame 3D printers. But it was Prusa's, modifications to the Mendel. It was at a jobs fair. And this was kind of, this was a homebrewed 3D printer at a jobs fair. I mean, it's got to have been 15 plus years ago. And I've been into it ever since, right? I asked the chap on the stool where he got it from. He said he printed it himself. I'm like, what did you use to print it? He's like, another 3D printer I made. And, he printed... Yeah, seriously, that was the whole RepRap thing, right? Like, he printed the parts for me and I begged, stole, and borrow the components to put one together. It never really worked very well. I remember I bought one of Prusa's first products, which was a nozzle made out of PEEK. I've still got it somewhere. But yeah, that was so long ago. Like, what's the story behind Prusa Research? Like, how long have they been around, and how did they come to be?
Yeah, as you said, it started with Prusa Mendel. It's been 2012 by starting the company, but Prusa Mendel, I think, it's 2009.
Yeah.
And since then, Prusa developed multiple printers. i3, you have it for yourself. Prusa Mini, Prusa XL, multi-tool, multi-material printers, etc. But Prusa Research is not only about 3D printers, it's also about the software around, because software, even though you have amazing hardware, you have nothing without software. So amazing job that our developers did with the firmware, implemented the first input shaper on Marlin. Without accelerometer, it's all calculated on the fly, but the values of the accelerometer are pre-calculated. And a lot of web services are online, like, for example, Prusa Help or Knowledge Base, Prusa Shop, obviously, Printables, almost biggest 3D model website that you can find around. And there's a lot of stuff that is in even C, like Prusa support. That's probably most interesting about us because we have live support almost 24/7 for 3D printers. We have a Prusa forum where you can ask. We have big community that we are grateful we have, and we are printing also next 3D printers at our farm. Thanks to you, because we can push forward because you are buying our printers, obviously.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah. I remember when Richie and I were first kind of exchanging notes on 3D printing, and Richie was very keen to get in touch with someone at Prusa Research and see if they were using Grafana. Richie, I can't remember the exact story. Did we see it in a video? Was that the, what, how did we first get in touch with Pavel?
Prusa used to run a Prusa Live podcast. They sadly stopped. And I watched this basically immediately, as soon as you can watch it on 2x speed, because nobody got time for 1x speed. And I did reach out to a few people who were, or basically everyone who was in the podcast, and no one ever really replied to me. And when I was organizing PromCon 2022, I just happened to see Prusa Research on the registration list. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So that's how Pavel and I got to know each other. He attended PromCon, and the rest is history.
Yeah, that's right. I remember I met you there. First time I met you there, Pavel. Like, and then they very graciously had us over for a visit in their factory and research facility in Prague. Is it Prague?
Yeah. Mm. Actually, we have manufacturing and development in one complex in Prague, Prague, Holešovice. We have multiple buildings around the Prague, but mostly in Holešovice, we are having our headquarters, manufacturing, development, web development, and also me as DevOps are sitting there in the offices.
Pavel, at the offices on the campus, is there just loads of 3D printed stuff everywhere? Because I looked on the printables.com, and you can actually get a 3D model of a crab spoon rest that holds a wooden spoon, a crab. Do you have things like that knocking about everywhere?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, yeah. And not only that, but everything you can imagine, a lot of plant pots for some reason. For some reason, there is a lot of them because they are getting gifts of everybody drinking them. And we have like 7 printers in the office. 2 XLs, multiple MK4s, one mini, and everybody just goes into the office. Hey, can we borrow your printer? Yeah, of course. And there's plant pots spawning around me, and tissue holders or something like that. That's very popular. Everybody's printing that.
And this is when you say your office, you literally just mean like your room in the complex, right?
Yeah. At our department called content, there's even a small farm, SLA farm, a lot of printers on the in the other offices, etc. Yeah, you have always place to print.
And to be clear, the 7 is a downgrade. I saw both his old and new office, and Tom, the office which you saw was the old one. I would guess this was more like a dozen, 1.5 dozen printers in the older, smaller room. And now it's actually a downgrade to only like 7. So and basically all the rooms look like this.
I only have 4 3D printers in my office at home. 3 of them are Prusa Labs. I'm a huge fan. I've got one of pretty much everything they make. And if you can hear printers in the background, that's what you can hear. I can hear them over Pavel's mic as well. I can hear your XL doing the fast travels occasionally.
Yeah, I'm printing keychains.
Keychains
for a friend.
I'm printing wind tunnels.
Oh,
yeah. It was a present for my brother who designs racing cars, and so I bought him some little model racing cars of ones that he'd designed over his career. And instead of, you know, this was for his birthday, instead of just like giving him a model of a car he designed, I thought, wouldn't it be cool to 3D print a wind tunnel to put it in with like smoke effects, so you could see the interaction of the air going over the car. Do you want to see? I actually have the prototype from the first version. It's a visual thing, so this is going to be great for a podcast. But do you want to see the first version I made?
Yeah, Pavel, you can criticize it for the people at home. What do you think of that? Oh, to be fair, that looks amazing.
No, not so much of orange, I think.
Yeah, too much orange.
One little bit, yeah.
It's Grafana Labs, though, Pavel. We've got to.
It's also the Prusa Labs colors as well. They're orange and black.
Yeah, exactly.
But Tom, some of that's got see-through. What's that see-through bit? Is that printed?
That's acrylic that I bent with a hairdryer.
Okay.
So, no, that's not... to make the... Yeah. It was an unsuccessful experiment, the bending it with a hairdryer.
Where have you got a hairdryer from? Where have you got...
I borrowed yours, Matt.
I don't need
another,
it.
Another visual gag, yeah. Speaking of things we have in common with Prusa Research, it's not just the color scheme, but everything at Prusa Research is also open source as well.
Not everything, of course, but yeah, we open source our firmware. Basically, you can build your own. We have only like closed source bootloader. So you have to pull the appendix from the motherboard, and it's like opening a bootloader at your Android phone. Mm-hmm. It's basically the same. You can flash your firmware if you want to. And there were actually a few custom firmwares in the past. I'm not sure if at this moment there is something for XL MK4, but for Mini there was alternative firmware, and for MK3, of course, there's a lot of alternative frameworks because it was built on Marlin. That's even MK4 is built on Marlin, but MK3 was built on Marlin as well. And it was running at 8-bit CPU, so it's pretty easy to program for.
No, I distinctly remember. I really appreciate the open source nature of Prusa Research and their things, because during the pandemic, it was impossible to get hold of Prusa Mini because they were sold out, right? So I ended up making my own one. I downloaded all your designs, 3D printed it. The bits that I couldn't source, I got replacements for. I didn't use the Buddy board. Is it the Buddy board?
Yeah, it's Buddy.
I didn't use the Buddy. I used one from a Chinese manufacturer, from Big Tree Tech instead. And it worked, would you believe it? And the thing is, I made it and gave it as a present to a friend of mine for his birthday. And he's still using it to this day. And I can't believe a hacked up 3D printer that I made from like some open source designs and some cheap Chinese components and, you know, had cables sticking out the side. And he's been printing with it for 3 or 4 years now. Like,
that's amazing.
So it's one of the things I really like about Prusa Research. And one of the reasons why I have your printers is because I know like I can hack on them and modify them.
That's also crazy that you printed some of a 3D printer. That is a little bit baffling. That's a bit like how...
Oh, quite a lot of it, yeah.
Yeah, like soon we won't be able to make 3D printers without already having 3D printers. Are we already there?
We have obviously metal parts that cannot be printed on 3D printers. But on MK4, all of the parts that were plastic were 3D printed. For MK4S, there are actually injection molded parts like a CD cover and cover of the Gladiator gearbox. But even then, you can still print them and modify them anyhow you want, because that's how we work. We are making the parts easy to manufacture for us, because it's much cheaper to injection mold than 3D print. But for you, for community, we really like to get something. So you can get the step files, modify them anyhow you want, and just put them on your printer and make, I don't know, what from your printer. Or change the color. Just change the colors. My wife wanted a pink 3D printer, so she have a pink MK3.5.
Pavel is actually underselling himself there. The vast majority of everything which Prusa ever produced was enabled by 3D printing. And when you visit, and they do tours, like there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of 3D printers running 24/7, just churning out parts for new 3D printers, which is part of why they are so reliable, because they use them for their own production. It's not just a product they shove out the door and it's your problem now. They actually run long term. And Tom and I, we saw printers which had been running for 400 hours with basically no maintenance and an empty error log. Like, we checked on site, they just keep running. Hey, future Richie here. I made a mistake. It's supposed to be over 400 days. Sorry, and on with the show.
Yeah, that was one of the most impressive things about the site visit, was the printer farm. And it's huge.
Yeah.
Like, and you can't imagine, like, you know, there's photos of it online. You can't imagine how many printers there are, and they're all just going producing more printers to sell. And it's actually a really good point you make there, Richie, because that's another thing that I think Grafana Labs and Prusa Research have in common. Like, we use a lot of our own tooling at Grafana Labs, and our staging cluster is our main operations cluster. So we use our own Grafana Cloud product, Mimir, Loki, Tempo, Grafana, to monitor our Grafana Cloud SaaS. And like, it's that drives the reliability, right? Because, you know, ideally, if there is a problem with any of our software, we're the ones to discover it first in our ops cluster, you know? And so we're constantly pushing out changes and testing them and using them in anger, and then only then giving them to customers. So that dog fooding is something that I think really drives a quality product. And I think it's like, it's fantastic how Prusa Research do that.
Yeah, print your own dog food.
you can say that our print farm is like our staging cluster.
Yeah.
Because we are running like over 700 printers, I think.
700?
Yeah, and most of them are MK4s. Then few XLs for the details that are printable only on XL because they are too big. And no Mini, because Mini doesn't make sense for us to have on the farm. However, thanks to 3D printing farm, we actually increase the reliability of our printers, and we found out few issues before the printers were released, and as well with the input chip, for example, it was tested at farm as well, and we were actually be able to get profiles for the printers optimized, and the farm is a crucial part of the company. Without the farm, we cannot produce any printer, and having like test environment like this is actually useful.
I really like drawing those parallels between two seemingly very unrelated activities and organizations. Like, you do dog fooding like we do, you do open source for a lot of the same reasons we do, and your logos are black and orange. Like,
coincidence. our logo is mostly black, but yeah, we use orange as our like significance color. You will see orange printer, then you know it's Prusa.
Yeah, that's cool. But you talk about that farm, the print farm. That sounds amazing. 700 printers. So that really makes it clear that why sort of Grafana is going to help there with the observability. What did you do before you had Grafana? How did you manage something like that?
Before we had Grafana, as I know correctly, we had nothing, at least for the 3D printing part of company, because when MK3 was in development, there was a need for the monitoring the printers. Mm-hmm. And mostly at the farm, you still had to go into printer and take the prints out, etc. You will notice probably that something is some issue with the printer. For the web development, I knew that Datadog was used, but yeah, I joined Prusa Research when Grafana was embraced, thankfully, and we are using Grafana since then. We, for DevOps, I can only say that we are cutting edge, so we are running on the last version of 10.4.1, and we are preparing to migrate to version 11, but for development part, it's a little bit older.
Nice. You're going to really like 11. The new Explore metrics and logs experiences in there are game-changing, in my opinion. Like, it makes it so much easier for more people in an organization to access their Prometheus metrics and their Loki logs. But you're not using Prometheus for a lot of things, are you? You use something else.
Yeah, and DevOps, yeah, we use Prometheus, makes sense, because we are scraping node exporters and Lego exporters, etc. But yeah, for the printers, Influx is used.
Oh, very cool.
InfluxDB version, I don't know. But the main reason why Influx is used is because need of nanosecond precision. Yeah, that's something that it's not possible with Prometheus. And that's why we are using Influx. Because when you are using developing printer, you really have to know when something occurred, and nanosecond precision is must.
Mm. Richie, why don't we have nanosecond precision in Prometheus?
Because it's always an engineering trade-off, how much precision versus how much data usage. And for most computer things, microseconds are more than enough, and that's why we use them. I mean, Pavel and I had this discussion recently. In my somewhat strong opinion, for everything where you actually need the super high precision, you tend to not have super long running things. And how the rest of the industry tends to do this, or actually pretty much all the established industries do it, is you use metrics with whatever precision for your long running stuff. And when you have your microburst on the network, or you have your jitter on the power supply, or whatever, you use actually logs or events with super high precision for a very short time, and only the really important stuff gets emitted. But I don't think the firmware of Prusa is there yet.
No, that's super cool. I do think, you know, even if it's just to get Prusa Research using Prometheus for their printer development, we should add nanoseconds. Like, I think that's a good enough reason for me.
You can actually get your metrics into Prometheus from the printers, thanks to Prusa Exporter that I wrote.
Oh, did you write that? I didn't know you wrote that.
Yeah. It's been a while. I touched it, but yeah, I wrote that. And basically, it's like getting the pen metrics from the printer and transforms them into Prometheus slash metrics endpoint for Prometheus. That's basically what it does. And what the printer sends is almost line protocol for Influx, but it's not line protocol, because in line protocol you have timestamp. There is no timestamp because printer doesn't have enough memory to send timestamp, so it sends delta, and it sends how for how it's running. So you have to remember somewhere for how long printer is running, actually.
And Richie takes a 3D printer to almost every Grafana Labs events and shows that work.
Yep.
Are you, we're going to New York next week, aren't we, for OpsCon. Are you going to take one to OpsCon, Richie?
So for the listeners, we have two printers which are actually owned by Grafana. One is in Europe and one is in the US. So yeah, we are shipping over the one we have in the US, and basically we use it to print swag, like Grafana coins. I'm holding them up, but you probably can't see them, or for shopping carts where you have to put in a coin to get the shopping cart out of the lock and things like these. Basically just little trinkets, which are just fun and hand pleasers, and you can fidget in whatever, but also you can see them being made on site. But the other thing, and the main thing actually, is we can display all the data which the printers are emitting in Grafana. And this gives you a little bit more of a tangible thing. Like, we can put up all the demos and all the recorded videos and everything we want, but to really drive home the point of the versatility of the whole platform, myself came up with the idea of, well, show something which people can actually touch, as opposed to just yet another Kubernetes cluster and you can't really see what's happening. So you see something in the real world, you can touch and even get the product, and you can see how it's made on the Grafana dashboards.
No, that's super cool. I'm actually 3D printing a wind tunnel right now to take to New York to do the same thing. So we're going to have a wind tunnel next to the 3D printer, and then in the wind tunnel is a little load cell, and you can measure the amount of downforce generated on a little toy car, and we're going to have that all displayed in a Grafana instance. And then at the end of the event, we're going to give it away as a prize draw to one of the attendees. So it's all a bit convoluted, but just having something a bit more, to Richie's point, something a little bit more interesting than yet another Kubernetes cluster running on a bunch of Raspberry Pis is our main aim here.
I don't know, it's a bit cliched, I think, giving away a 3D printed wind tunnel as a prize.
Oh, it's been done before, hasn't it, Matt?
It's been done a lot, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Just checking printables.com for other things we could give away. You can download and print a cat skull. It's available on printables.com.
There are other ways of getting hold of cat skulls as well. You don't have to print them.
Is this for like a replacement, like if your cat's not well? Like, you mentioned the medical use earlier. Is this really like, are we using 3D printers in the medical world now?
Yeah, obviously you have to buy a medical van. You cannot use a usual printer. You have to have special.
What's special about it?
Yeah, it's optimized for medical use. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's mostly it. It's a resin printer, so it's good for like printing teeth and
printing
like
teeth
replacement.
Oh, seriously, my dentist near just down the road that I go to has a Prusa 3D printer in their shop. And if you do an X-ray 3D scan of your mouth, they 3D print your dentures to fit. I don't think they're the final ones, though. I think they send them away for the final ones. They're just for fit and finish or something. I'm not sure. I have all my own teeth for now.
Yeah. It's mostly for temporary.
There are actual medical uses for, and I know for a fact that they're using Prusa, because this was something which Prusa actually sponsored, and they gave a few 3D printers away for free into both Ukraine and Africa. Splints for when you break a bone or something. One of the main plastics you print with is called PLA, and it has a relatively low temperature point where it starts to become soft, like 60 degrees roughly Celsius. So you can print it, you can dump it into hot water, you can take it out and you can press it against the skin of the patient, and it takes shape, or it resettles into shape around the specific arm, hand, foot, whatever of the person, as a super low cost and in the field way of making splines and such.
Yeah.
And of course, during the pandemic, Prusa did all that work producing PPE as well.
Yeah, we were producing the face shields. I don't know if somewhere else outside of the Czech Republic, but in the Czech Republic, there was a like movement of 3D printed face shields. And even I was part of the movement. I had MK3 back then, and I was printing the holder. It was using that plastic sheet for papers you can use. And I remember that I destroyed my printer because I moved it too close to the wall, and I destroyed the cable that runs from the heatpad to the trim printer.
Mm.
Yeah, it's basically snapped, and yeah, I wasn't printing for a while because I wasn't able to get like replacement parts. But yeah, the printer is actually still working, and I was using it from 2017.
Oh, wow.
Well, you see, we're not just big, massive nerds. We're saving lives over here. Marvelous.
And Prusa Research also distributed a lot of those shields. And you can even buy them at this moment at Prusa Shock. But they are for different use at this moment.
They're even certified across the European Union. So this is an actual medical device which has been certified across all of the European Union.
Yeah, certification is something that we are moving forwards to. For example, our PETG, something like PET for the bottles, but just similar, it's not same. Got, how it's called, V0 certification. That's actually can, it's not flammable and it can exhaust itself. Pretty very, very good use for like automotive or like electronics overall.
So one of the things I always wondered, like now that you're gathering all this data, not just from your software infrastructure and your websites and so on, but from the printers, what is the most interesting kind of artifact or thing you've discovered that you previously didn't know?
Maybe how the printer is work for me, cannot speak for the whole company, but for me, it's how printer works with power supply and how effective it is while it's printing. When it's not printing, then it was around 15 watts. But when it's printing, it's actually use pulse width modulation for powering everything it's, it needs. It's from it's pretty much older than I thought. It was used as well at MK3, but M4, MK4, mostly for XL because you have like 4x4 heat beds. There's not one big heat bed, but 4x4 smaller ones. It's used this modulation for getting correct temperatures and also expandability of the heat beds, because the heat bed is expanding while it's heating. So that's why it's not one big heat bed, but smaller ones.
Were there any other kind of interesting use cases or things you found?
Yeah, for 3D printers, it was probably the use of load cell data. Basically, if you have any like 3D object in the reality, you can use the load cell sensor on the nozzle to probe the model or anything you have on the printer to get the shape of the model in the 3D space. It's not easy, obviously. You have to calculate a lot and get the data from the printer. But yeah, you can actually get 3D model from the load cell sensor. It's like 3D scanner, and everyone at the company, not everyone, but a lot of people was asking when we are going like release 3D scanner. Yeah, we already did.
I used my iPhone to 3D scan a car recently, and it was quite difficult, quite painful. Mm. And so if you do happen to make a 3D scanner that can scan a car, I'll be the first in line to buy one.
Was that somebody who cut you up? But instead of taking a picture, you're like, right, hold on. I want to get the whole
just
park
there for an hour in perfect sunlight. No, it was my dad's got a kit car, and I wanted to 3D print a model of his kit car to put in the wind tunnel, so it all connects.
Oh, sweet.
So I 3D scanned it with my phone, and I've now got a massive point cloud that I need to figure out how to do something with. But you know, that's a problem for a long flight someday.
As well, with the laser sensor, it's interesting that you can actually print on any surface you want. And we recently released a video about printing on different surfaces. And there was also like PlayStation 4 used for as a printing sheet. And
oh, wow.
We were printing directly on the PlayStation 4. Or you can print on t-shirts. Actually, it works pretty well. And you can print like a giant Grafana logo on your t-shirt and with XL, obviously. And thanks to load cell sensor, it will be printed, actually. Yeah, load cell sensor is actually a real amazing technology that we accompany in our printer. And no leveling issues, finally, after MK3.
Yes. Yeah, no, tell me about it. So you said before the podcast when we were chatting that you're thinking of adopting Mimir for your metrics.
Yeah, exactly. We are using Prometheus, obviously, as our backend, but for Federation, we have multiple instances. We use Thanos at this moment, and we are experimenting with Mimir because we are going to move our DevOps cluster to a different region. And yeah, this is a really good opportunity to migrate the data because mostly we are going to scrap them, you know. We are moving somewhere else, so we are probably going to scrap them. And using Grafana Mimir for myself, for my purposes, as it's for push exporter, exporting data for everything I want, it works pretty well. And it's, for me, it's more scalable. And this is future of the DevOps department for now. And hopefully, if we implement the Prometheus metrics for the printers, then for the at least farm as well.
No, that's very cool. I mean, you've mentioned, so far you've mentioned Datadog, you mentioned Influx, now Thanos. Like, I want to say, like, this is the Big Tent podcast, so we embrace all of the metrics backends. That's totally cool. But why are you moving off of Thanos, you know, to Mimir? What's motivating that move?
For us, it's slow queries. We have over 2 years of data. Yeah, there's some discussions inside of the company if we need this amount of data. But yeah, there's 2 years of data. And if you query over them, like 14 days, it takes a lot of time to get the data from the Thanos. And yeah, that's basically the main reason. Store gateway is starting to too slowly, etc.
One of the things we designed, Mimir, I mean, I wrote the early versions of Mimir when it was, before it was called Mimir, when it was called Cortex. One of the things we designed it to do is lots of parallel queries, like, and really be able to scale in that dimension. And it was kind of, we did it for fun. And, you know, it turns out, you know, at the time, at least, it might not have been the thing people actually needed, right? Because that most people needed what you've just described, which is querying over, you know, months or years of data. But the thing I'm most excited about is we finally found a use case for being able to handle high concurrent query load. And it's this new explore metrics. Like, so in Grafana, the explore metrics, when you click on a metric, is going to go off and do a query for every single label behind that metric, right? To see which labels have kind of outliers in and what the distributions are. And so, you know, just clicking on a metric issues like 15 queries instantaneously and puts a lot of load on the Mimir cluster, but it's something Mimir handles very well. And it's really just, it's really interesting because, like, we've had a lot of users tell that story where, like, oh, I'm moving off of Thanos because I started using the Explore metrics and it was killing my cluster. And so we're starting to move to Mimir or to Grafana Cloud. You know, we run our Grafana Cloud Mimirs with many, many replicas of the querier to deal with this exact use case. So kind of was a solution in search for a problem for a while, but we found one finally.
It's another version of dog fooding, really. We basically DDoS ourselves and then we have to make sure that works and keeps working. You know, it's quite fun.
I remember when the Explore metrics team were like, oh, we've got to be careful with how many queries we issue to the metrics back. And I'm like, no. You're just giving the metrics team a challenge, giving them something to work on.
And we've done that for logs, profiles, and traces, of course, as well. Yeah, we'll post a link in the show notes for more information about those apps. Okay, before we wrap this up, quick question for each of you. What is the best thing you have 3D printed?
So we're all holding up a little 3D printed Grot. So Grot is the Grafana Labs mascot. And the reason it's called Grot is we initially had a GitHub bot called the Grafana bot. Mm. And it was our bot that would, like, you know, deploy stuff and close issues we didn't like, things like that. And it had our art department did a little 2D mascot of Grot, of the Grafana bot, and we renamed it to Grot. And it started to be used by our marketing team, and then it started to be used by our community team, and suddenly we've got this little company mascot that's a little junior kind of juvenile dinosaur, So I went on Fiverr. Is it Fiverr? Yeah, Fiverr, which is like a gig website, and found someone who would turn the 2D images that our art department had done, turn them into a 3D STL, and then posted it up on Printables, and Pavel downloaded it and colorized it because I didn't at the time have a multicolor printer. And so Pavel's got a giant Grot in the Grafana colors. I've got a little one now that I printed off. And yeah, like I just think the power of both collaborating over the internet, finding a random person to design it, and then Pavel coloring it in. And yeah, like I just think it's a really cool story. And of course, we'll post links to the grot on Principles in the show notes. And if you want a 3D printed grot, I printed off about 100 of them. It did take quite a while, and gave them out at reInvent in Vegas last year. And so I'll probably do the same this year. So come find me at reInvent, and I might have a 3D printed grot.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. Can you beat grot? By the way, like, be careful what internal jokes you do, because sometimes they do get out.
You mean like a onesie?
No, no, the grot is... so the thing that I find amusing is the Americans don't get that. Like, but grot in British English is kind of dirty. Like, grotty means right. Dirty, right?
Oh, does it not mean that though?
No, like, and I think there might even be worse connotations to the word, but we've called our mascot grot, and that's here to stay.
Yeah, that's it. Richie, do you like that name?
I'm pretty certain I was part of the people pushing for the name and the subsequent creation of the original 2D thing, because it follows the Grafana G thing to some extent. Like, if you look at it not too closely, you can see that this is actually inspired by a G, and it's following the Grafana G.
Yeah, that used to be a dinosaur, didn't it, as well? The original Grafana logo, you can still find it on the web.
It wasn't a dinosaur. I forgot the English term. It's a lizard, not a batagam.
So what's the best thing you printed then, Richie? The suspense is killing me.
Honestly, it's probably the first thing which I printed, which is a lamp holder, which I whipped up with no skills within like half an hour in what's the thing? The super basic 3D thingy online. I forgot the name, but basically I meshed up a few shapes and I printed a lamp holder, and it's still going strong years later, and it still holds up the lamp. So that's probably it.
You pointed to the ceiling there. Did you print the ceiling? Is that the thing that's holding the lamp?
No, he was pointing to heaven where the lamp holder is now.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Is the direction. Also, maybe this is a fun fact I can share here, and I'm going to shock and Tom and Pavel here. Mm-hmm. I never in my life printed a banshee.
Oh, no.
What? You're not really a 3D printer.
So for the audience, benchies are like a calibration print thingy.
Mm.
That's a good point, actually. I haven't printed a benchy on the XL yet. I need to...
What is it?
It's a little boat. I've got one up here.
Oh.
It's for calibration, basically.
Calibration boat.
Yeah.
And it used to be quite a tricky print, because it's got like, you're printing in thin air. Like, it's got lots of overhangs. It's got this bow that's kind of difficult to print on that printer. It didn't print very well at all.
Mm.
You know, and so it's quite a... It used to be quite a tricky print. Now, any printer you buy will print a benchy straight away. Like, and, you know, and now there's this thing called the speedboat race, which is see how quickly you can print a benchy. And I think the record's like 2 minutes. Like, you can turn out one of those in 2.5 minutes. Like, I mean, it's barely recognizable. It's a blob of plastic, but it's just about a recognizable benchy.
And do they float?
No, they turn over in the bath.
They capsize.
In the bath? Oh, he's taking it in the bath, isn't he?
There was actually a YouTube video about a lady, I forgot, Emily the engineer. She 3D printed a benchy which is large enough for her to sit in.
That's amazing.
Pavel, what was the best thing you've ever printed? Please don't say benchy.
No, it's a benchy. It's not buddy. But it was Joseph's book that had back in the day. And that's why the printer motherboards are called Buddy. However, it was probably, if you know Stargate, Atlantis, then the Atlantis, the city, was one of my first prints, and I still have it somewhere in silver PLA in 2017. And yeah, that's probably the best print I ever did, because I still remember it. And yeah, I also printed the SGC logo as well. But yeah, the Atlantis is the best thing I ever printed.
You can download your GitHub timeline, like the green dots, as an STL to print, like where each one's like a different height depending on the...
Oh.
Yeah, I know, you got to do it.
Yeah, that is cool.
Go on, Matt, I'll print yours for you and send it over.
Oh, let me do some coding first.
Yeah, you have to do some work first.
Yeah, it'll just be a flash. I could probably do it at the moment with the 2D.
Yeah, it's just a blank sheet of paper. Yeah, from that.
Okay, well, sadly, that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much. And honestly, genuinely considering getting a 3D printer now, just for that GitHub thing alone. Yeah. Thank you so much, Tom. Richie Hartman also here, and our special guest, Pavel Strobel. Thank you very much. I'm Matt Ryer, and we'll see you next time on Grafana's Big Tent.